Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezovic, Nick Kieser on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a great start to your day so far, as a lot to get into. You know, we may be in that dead season of sports, but I feel like there's a lot to discuss today. A lot of different opinions, whether it's Nick Saban giving his opinion on things, which is always good. And I have some thoughts on that. But obviously, D-Hop Watch continues here in Nashville and I guess in New England as well. But I want to start with the Tennessee Volunteers. Their season comes to an end last night. I'm going to be honest. I was watching the game and I was just expecting that, you know, that rally and that they would come back and win it, and it never came. So, unfortunately, their season comes to an end in Omaha. But I would say, in asking the question right now, do you consider this season to be a success? We asked Joe Rexroad that yesterday. I say yes, even though I know they were picked to do more maybe, but they still got to Omaha, even with some of the challenges that they had throughout the season.
No, I think if you know you look at what this team did in the second half of the season, you have to say it's a success. I mean, what is the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is winning a championship, and they got pretty darn close to it. I think when you look at the season as a whole, I mean – there were, at least the first part of the season, it was really disappointing for Vols fans. I mean, it's almost like the tale of two halves, right? You look at the first half of the season and you think, is this team even going to make the tournament? And their preseason, second in the country. I think they were right behind LSU. And then something flips, and the second half of the season, I mean, they were extremely successful. I mean, I couldn't have thought that this team was gonna, you know, make it to Omaha and make the run that they did. You know, they lose, they're in the loser's bracket, but then, you know, find themselves with another matchup against LSU yesterday, one of the best teams in the country right now. So I think when you look at it as a whole, I think it's becoming the expectation, if that makes sense. So, you know, when you look at success, yeah, you won games in Omaha. That's successful. That's what you want. Tony Vitello spoke after the game, and he had some good comments just on, you know, we've been slowly but surely, like, they haven't won a game in Omaha since, like, the 2000s. I mean, so this is a significant step in the right direction. Last year, they had one of the best teams in the country. They couldn't make it to Omaha. So when you look at this team and you take even a further step back of the last couple of years in this Tennessee baseball program, I think you have to look at it as a success, slowly but surely. You know, you make it to Omaha, and then you have the best team in college baseball. You don't make it. Now you make it there, and you win games in Omaha. That's very significant. So I would say you would have to look at it as a whole and say, yes, there was success this season.
Well, and this was Tony Vitello, as you alluded to, after the game last night on what he wants his team to be remembered for.
Tony, I know you mentioned yesterday's game is what you'll choose, the game you'll choose to remember this team by, but what do you want this team to be remembered for on the grand scheme?
You know, kind of what you fantasize being if you claim to be a competitor or if you compete at all, is that you'll get after it no matter what. And when you get knocked down, you'll get back up. And when you get knocked down again, you'll get up even quicker. And so on and so forth. So I think it was a competitive group. They can hang their hat on the fact that, you know, we talked about perspective. There's a variety of tradition within each program. And it takes a lot in our league to be able to brag about tradition. But for us in particular, we wanted to get to a regional, and then we wanted to have a roster that was really athletic that you guys would be excited to write about. And, you know, COVID's whatever. And then we wanted to get here, and we didn't win any games. And then we wanted to get here again and win a game, and this group did it. And, you know, I skipped a year, but boys that are a part of 22, give it a couple years, and you'll get yours. No national championship, but pretty special group that will be remembered by everybody in this room for a lot of stuff, love them or hate them. I love them.
That was Tony Vitello, Vols head coach, last night. And, you know, we were discussing yesterday about, you know, the coach that we feel like, you know, could have the most success. And a lot of people say him. You know, I went with Josh Heupel ultimately. But I think this resurgence that we talk about with the Vols, I mean, you can really point to Tony Vitello that's kind of where it started, like with his program, because Vols baseball had had so much, you know, it had had success, but then it had been a while since it had had that success. He comes in and really changes the narrative. Now, you know, Rick Barnes has done some good things in the regular season with the basketball team, but then you start to see kind of the other programs follow suit. So, I mean, I think some of this success that the Vols athletic department as a whole has had kind of started with when Tony Vitello got on campus.
Sure. Were the Vols ever, though? I mean, and I'm not even sure. So Vols fans, help us out. I mean, were they ever, you know, when we talk about their glory days years and years ago, like 10, 20 years ago, were they ever, you know, nationally recognized, nationally successful?
I don't think at this point, like in baseball, you mean?
Yeah, specifically baseball.
I wouldn't say to this point.
So this is almost like new success, right? And I think it goes back to our point, Chase, we've been talking about. It's not just football and women's basketball, right? It's the wealth is being spread out among the college or among the Tennessee athletic program. And Tony Vitello, I mean, you know, he has been somebody who, and he was I need to double check this, but he was a Danny White hire, I'm pretty sure.
Who, Vitello?
Yes.
No. He was.
Heupel was, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So he, okay. So yes, so Tony Vitello was not hired by Danny White, but you know, you look at the amount of attention.
Vitello, I think, might have been Hart. I can't remember. He's been there a minute.
You look at, though, the attention that this Vols baseball team has gotten, and you look at, you know, in-state rivalries, and we talked for a minute about, you know, there are a couple years where Vanderbilt football, you know, was able to have Tennessee's number, where they beat them a couple years in a row and back and forth, but Vanderbilt has always had baseball. That has been, you know, Vanderbilt's baby. That is their sport. And now to see the Vols baseball program emerging and becoming nationally relevant, competitive at the national level, you know, making postseason runs, it has created a lot of in-state fun rivalries. I mean, I saw a lot of hate watching by Vanderbilt fans. We had a lot of texts on the text line, Vanderbilt fans laughing. But, I mean, the reality is this program that Tony Vitello has been able to create and create this culture, it's become very successful. And if they can, you know, keep the recruiting up, finding guys from JUCO colleges who can be a factor, keep recruiting your current guys on your roster and, you know, not having them go into the transfer portal or having losses from year to year. I mean, I believe that this can be consistent because we have seen Tony Vitello be able to stack years on top of each other and be the program that they are.
It was John Curry that hired.
Oh, okay. So
Tony Vitello. That's really the only claim to fame John Curry can
have.
Yeah,
I was gonna say. Wow. Okay.
At the University of Tennessee in his less than a year as AD at UT. What a wild time that was. But yeah, that's what I thought. No, and it's hard to believe that Vitello has been there since 2017 now. So
yeah,
I mean, he's had time, you know, to really build a program.
Yeah, I mean, he's been there like 6 years. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's crazy to think. But, I mean, although I think it's easy to look at, you know, well, I mean, is it successful? They were preseason, you know, the second best team in the country. Well, I think LSU was preseason number one team in the country, and they lost to them in the college playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about interpretation. Like Ken and Waverly says, the state of Tennessee has such a low standard in sports. We praise a football coach like he's a god with 3 out of 5 playoff wins. The Vols make the College World Series, and all of a sudden it's a golden era for Vol sports. How about we actually win something, then we can praise? And there's going to be a lot of people that have that mentality. I think there are different levels of success. You know, that you're going to have one champion in each sport every year. Everybody's goal is to win the championship, no doubt, and that should be the goal. But not everybody's going to do that. So I think you can gauge success, you know, in a different way than more than just winning a championship. I mean, if you want to have the mentality of, oh, you didn't win the championship, so it wasn't a successful season, that's fine.
But you also have to get to that level.
Right.
You have to get to the Alabama footballs. You have to get to, I mean, Georgia football is getting up there. You have to get to the Vanderbilt baseballs, the Kentucky basketballs, the Duke basketballs. Like, every year you don't win a championship because you have an advantage of recruiting. And I do think things are going to change. I don't think we're going to see as dominant programs that we've seen in the past because of NIL, because of the transfer portal, and, you know, different things like that. But you have to get to that level first. You have to get to the level where you are stacking championships upon championships to then have that expectation.
Well, and I've always said that I think teams that – you have to learn how to win. And so sometimes you have to go through losing to learn how to win. You have to lose a championship game or a big playoff game or what have you to kind of learn what it's going to take to finally get over that hump. And that's what a lot of these programs go through. You know, maybe we're going to see that with the Vols football team, that,
maybe,
you know, they've learned what that feeling was like losing to South Carolina the way they did, a team that they should have beaten, you know, going into it. But how tough the SEC is night in and night out.
It's getting tougher, too.
Yeah, and it's – so, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, I think, to measure success and to gauge it all. But, you know, I mean, I get Kenny Waverly's point of view, and I think a lot of people have that point of view. So the Vols baseball team will come home, and – things continue there in Omaha without them. Elliot Friedman going to join us at 10:30 today, a special one-off with us. As usually, he's on the midday show every Thursday at 1 o'clock. He'll be there tomorrow, but wanted to get his thoughts on the draft and some of the moves that might be made around the NHL next week with the draft coming to Nashville. But coming up next, some interesting comments from Alabama football coach Nick Saban on what's wrong with college football, how he views things right now. He was on the Joel Klatt podcast and gave his thoughts on that. We'll discuss next. Chase and Michelle on a Wednesday, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
If you were to start to address some of the issues in college football, where would you start?
Well, I think you have to create a balance between how much do you take and how much do you give.
Okay.
You know, we're giving people scholarships. We're creating name, image, and likeness opportunities. But what is their commitment? I mean, there's no place in the world where you don't have a contract. If you're going to receive benefits, you have a contract and an obligation to do a certain job. So when you can opt out, transfer, do whatever you want, whenever you want, I'm not sure the balance is quite right.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of people out there that are much more qualified than me that are trying to figure out how do we fix this. But I think we do need to create some balance, because I think at the end of the day, when you create an atmosphere where somebody's tentatively committed to what they're trying to accomplish, you have to evaluate, is that really a good thing?
Sure.
Because we all need to be totally committed to whatever, you know, our goals and aspirations are, the sense of purpose that we have, if we're going to have a chance to be successful.
Alabama football coach Nick Saban on the Joel Klatt Show podcast. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, discussing what's up with college football. Nick Saban's view on college football and what's wrong with it right now. So I heard those comments, and immediately I do agree with him to an extent, because it, you know, there's not a direction. That's the problem. There's no rules. It's just kind of the wild, wild west, as we like to refer to it. However, I will, and I like Nick Saban. I have a lot of respect for Nick Saban, but I will point out where he contradicts himself a little bit, and that is when he talks about contracts. Don't coaches have contracts that they get out of all the time when a better job comes along? Now, with them, there's buyouts and, you know, there is some sort of a penalty, but really not that much. So, I mean, if you're going to sit there and you're going to say, and, you know, to his point, he's been at Alabama for all these years now, but he left the Miami Dolphins when he said he wasn't going to take the Alabama job, and then he took the Alabama job. So there is a little bit of a contradictory point of view there. And he's not the only coach that would have that. But for the most part, I hear what he's saying, and I agree with him that, you know, it is kind of the, if you don't like the situation, whatever, I can just leave free and clear.
Yeah, I mean, I think the transfer portal has shown us a lot about, you know, if you don't like your situation and everybody is in a completely different situation, you know, when you're getting recruited, if you're being told one thing and then when you actually get there, something else is happening, or you don't like the culture, whatever it may be, or you don't have enough playing time. You don't think you are getting as much playing time as you want. It's easy to hop in the portal. But I think at the end of the day, you know, yeah, it stinks from a coaching perspective. You want to be able to kind of build off your teams, especially for the guys that you want to be there for 4 years and really build a team. And if a guy just hops in the transfer portal and goes to, say, a Tennessee, you know, of course it's going to stink. But I also think it's important to remember, a lot of times these athletes enter the transfer portal and don't end up somewhere.
Right.
I mean, that is something that is so important to also remember. So when you talk about, there's no repercussion. Well, yeah, the top athletes from an Alabama, from a Kentucky basketball, if you are one of the top recruits in the transfer portal, yeah, everybody's going to be running after you to get you and pick you up. But the reality is there are thousands of athletes in the transfer portal that will be left with no school to end up at because they enter it so quickly and then there's no place for them.
And they have to go crawling back. I mean, there's been
if the team has a spot, if they have a scholarship available.
Right, but I mean, and that's what I mean. I mean, there's been instances where a player has – you know, tested the market and then realized there's nothing out there. And then they try to come back and they've either lost their scholarship or the locker room's like, nah, bro, like he wanted to leave.
Yeah. And I think that that's what is forgotten a lot about. Like when Nick Saban is talking about it, of course, if he loses one of his guys at Alabama, who's a starter and he wants to go to Georgia or something like that. Yeah, that sucks. That sucks. One of your best players is able to, you know, hop in the portal and then immediately will be picked up because it's breaking news when a player of that stature heads into the transfer portal and wants to leave their program. Sure, that's a bad situation. No coach would be happy about one of their best players leaving. But if they really want to leave, they would have left before, even if they probably had to sit a year. It just makes it easier now. But if you look at the full picture and you look at the transfer portal as a whole, more often than not, a lot of people will announce they're heading into the transfer portal and they will not get many calls whatsoever. Yeah. Or they'll go down a level and play at a smaller school or something like that.
They think their market is bigger than what it actually is. Yeah. 615-737-1025. Do you agree with Nick Saban's comments on what's wrong with college football? That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. There was another part of this, too, where Joel Klatt asked about unions.
Along those lines, do you think it would help if the players were organized so that they could be collectively bargained with so that some of those contractual obligations could take place?
You know, I think that it never scares me that people are organized. Mm-hmm. I think there's some good in that. I mean, I think, you know, General Motors and the automotive industries had unions for a long time, and they survived fairly well, I think. So, but there's a lot of people who are a little skeptical,
right.
And I can understand why, that you make college student athletes employees. And I think when you organize them, that's maybe what the ultimate result, you know, may be. So, and I can't honestly say that I'm qualified to know exactly what the cause and effect of that would really be.
That was Nick Saban on the Joel Klatt podcast with unions. So, again, you know, I feel like there he said the right thing, that, you know, maybe there does need to be more of an organization with some of this. Because if you keep going without a net, I mean, it's just going to get worse. And like, it's to the point, and it's not just college football, it's college athletics as a whole. It's to the point where you can't put the genie back in the bottle. I mean, it is just so out there now, and there's so much movement. But and the kids are going to take advantage of it right now, and they should, because they have no net. So why wouldn't they take advantage of it? But I think it's going to get to a point where somebody's got to step in. And I, you know, Jared was talking about this yesterday. I heard Caroline William DeMay's talking about it. You know, does it need to be a college football czar? Do the commissioners need to organize and create more of a standard of what this needs to be? And then the players organize and you know, they can come together and create a standard. I mean, do the NFL and the NFLPA always agree? Hell no, we know they don't. But do we think that that system works better than not having a union? I would say yes.
Well, it needs to be the NCAA. That's who it needs to
be. Well, the NCAA, I mean, they're not going to do anything.
Well, I mean, actually, the new president of the NCAA had an interview, you know, the other day, actually during the College Baseball World Series, and he said, you know, he brought up something about making these NIL contracts public. I think they all should be public information. I mean, why not, right? I mean, I think that by them being required to have, you know, public contracts, public records, then you can try and avoid some of this collective and the pay to play, and you can try to, you know, make sure that there's some sort of overarching rule for it. You're not going to have a salary cap. That's absolutely not going to happen. There's not going to be a cap on how much money that these players can make, because it is not a pay for play. It is, although I know you can round about it and say, well, they are getting paid because they are an Alabama football player. Sure. But that is their brand. They are then partnered with organizations, with, you know, shoe companies, mustard bottle companies, like Hendon Hooker was, right? I mean, I think that actually would be a really good idea, making contracts public. And, you know, is there a separate, like you said, union? Is there a separate organization, or is it a branch of the NCAA who makes that happen? Because the NCAA has been very, very hands-off with all the NIL things. And, I mean, Mark Emmer, for the last couple of years, has just been like, hands
he
up.
He stole money. That's all he did. He stole money. Mark Emmer, to me, there will be a 30-30 about him, 30-for-30 about him, about how he stole money. That's all he did. He didn't do anything.
And, you know, this new commissioner coming in, you know, even just starting off like that, okay, well, NCAA, if you want a future, you know, grab the reins and figure out what you want to do. Have some sort of plan. Don't just act like hands off and it's never going to happen, because, you know, sports are evolving. You know, NIL is a thing. It is happening. So figure out a way. You're paid to do this. Figure out a way that you can come up with something like that. I think something along those lines of making contracts public could help, you know, avoid some of this collective stuff and paying to play and just donating, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars to specific players. I think that could help, but
So the NCAA, I have some thoughts on the NCAA, and this quote from Charlie Baker, the new president, that was, you referenced the interview we did during the College World Series in talking about the portal. But first, Nate wants to weigh in on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate, what's up?
Hey, Nate.
Morning, y'all. So it's funny how last year when Nick Saban was talking about how good the portal was, and then they don't make the playoffs, and then this year he comes and talks it down. I do think that, you know, there are obviously some flaws in college sports as a whole, and especially the portal, but I just think it's funny. Also, y'all were about to discuss the comments about the new NCAA commissioner. What do y'all think about what he said with the portal potential? He can see it slowing down because he thinks it was due to COVID, with the players not being able to, you know, visit the schools, and they really didn't fully know what they were getting into with each school.
Well, that was where I was going to go next, Nate. So thanks for bringing that up for sure. I appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to hear your thoughts and everybody else's thoughts on that quote. Aaron in Whitehouse says college sports were better when the transfers were rare and being paid by NIL wasn't a thing. Makes college sports feel like professional sports. Kills the for the love of aspect of college sports. That from Aaron. And I think there's a lot of people that feel that way. We'll continue this discussion. Continue to weigh in 615-737-1025. Do you agree with Nick Saban? Plus a quote from Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, on the portal. Do that next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, The Game. Chase and Michelle broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Catch the Rackley Roofing 200, Tennessee Lottery 250, and, of course, the Ally 400 on 1025, 1063, The Game, June 23rd through the 25th, Friday through Sunday. Coverage is presented by Richmar Florists, a top 100 florist company in the country and proud sponsor of the Nashville Super Speedway. Looking forward to race weekend coming up. Taking your calls and your texts right now on college football and comments from Nick Saban on Joel Klatt's podcast on whether they should have unions for the players, NIL, the transfer portal, all these things. NCAA President Charlie Baker was on the broadcast, ESPN broadcast, for the College World Series, and made this comment about the portal that I found to be interesting, and Nate just alluded to it when he called in. Baker says, quote, look, I think the portal, there's a couple of things about the portal we need to remember. One is we have a lot of student athletes going into the portal who have a fifth and sixth year of eligibility. We also have the classes of 24 and 25 that didn't actually get to visit the school they had to choose. If you look at the numbers of students, period, at colleges who have been transferring for the past few years, the numbers are really high. The student athlete numbers are actually lower as a percent of their total part of the population. But there's a lot of movement that I think is driven by the fact that you had 2 years where most of the kids didn't get a chance to visit a school before they had to choose where to go, which is complicated. So he's basically referencing the COVID years, that they couldn't do the normal campus visit and things like that. And I get that, and that is true. But I and, you know, Baker's new at this. This Mark Emmert, he did nothing during his tenure. The NCAA was always asleep at the wheel. You know, I've felt that way for a long time. And finally, the conferences and the conference commissioners just kind of took over and said, okay, fine, you're not going to do anything. We got it. You know, we'll just keep this train moving.
Sure.
And now all of a sudden they want to jump on, you know. But he's new, so I'll give him a chance. Here's what I think is going to happen, though. I think everything he said was right. But then they're going to come up with another excuse and then another excuse and then another excuse unless they get in front of this and put some regulations behind it. I have always said that I think everybody gets one. That's fine. I have no issue with that because a 17, 18-year-old kid making a decision on where they're going to go to school, they're going to change their mind. I mean, I remember when I was that age, I changed my mind every 5 minutes.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think that if they get there and a coach leaves or a position coach leaves or whatever, and they decide that, you know, this isn't a fit, okay, you get one. That's fine. But that's it. And none of this, you know, wild, wild west stuff. Now, coaches probably won't like that, but that's the way it is. You can't stockpile talent and then not use the talent and expect them to just be okay with that.
Yeah, well, let's look at the numbers. So in 2021, there were 17,781 athletes in the transfer portal. So that's across all sports. That is the total number of players, student athletes that entered the transfer portal in 2021. In 2022, the total number of student athletes that entered the transfer portal were 20,911 students. So a significant increase from 2021 to 2022. And obviously, we are in the middle of 2023 right now, so we have to wait to see. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw another increase once the 2023 numbers are out. But there are a lot of students who find themselves in the transfer portal. I like your idea of, hey, you only get one. I think that's fair. I think something else that could be, you know, implemented would be a time frame, right? We talk about free agency. We talk about different rules that you have in the NFL. And because football obviously is the revenue driving sport for most schools, why don't you have a specific date? You have to let us know by date X, Y, and Z if you're going to play here next year or if you're going to, you know, enter the transfer portal, and then another date to when you need to decide. And if it's after that date, you have to sit out. I mean, sure. Have specific dates that you have to meet, because I think at the end of the day, first off, coaches want their players there, right? They want to know who's on their team. Okay, there's a certain date. You have to be here. We know you're going to be on our team by, you know, this date in August or something like that, right? Before the school year starts. And make it for all sports, right? Don't make it in October for basketball. Make it a certain date in August where you need to decide on where you're going to play if you want your eligibility for that year. And then have a certain date. You know, I know it gets kind of sticky because you have some summer sports like college baseball that are playing obviously into the summer. But have a certain date. You have to let your current organization or your current team know that, hey, I'm entering the transfer portal and there is no way I'm coming back next year. And make it dates that they need to hit. And if they don't hit those dates, then you have to sit out. Because obviously the ability to just, here, I'm going to jump in the portal. I'm going to jump out. I'm going to jump in here. Oh, I'm going to go to Tennessee. Okay. And I don't have to sit out. Oh, you know, I didn't really love Tennessee this year. I'm going to transfer to Oklahoma because my buddy from high school says that there's this donor that gives great NIL deals. So I'm going to hop over there. I think do something like that. And then, Chase, like you said, you know, make the transfer portal, you know, one time. I think it does get sticky, though. So say you are somewhere your freshman year and then you hop in the transfer portal and you go from a Tulane to
Nice.
Yeah. You go from a Tulane, which is a smaller Division I school, and you're able to jump up to a Missouri.
Yeah.
Right. So you're able to jump up into the SEC to have your sophomore, junior, and senior year. And then if you want to be a grad transfer somewhere and you want to go get your master's or something like that, and you have an opportunity to go to a Northwestern, right? You know, that's when it gets tricky of if you're only allowed that one transfer, but then if you want to be able to go get your master's somewhere or do a grad year at maybe
a
different school.
Well, I think that's different. I mean,
I do too, but you're all like,
yeah, but I even think now the rule applies that with once you're a grad transfer, you get the second one, and once you graduate, you can go wherever you want. And I don't have an issue with that either because you've graduated. It's kind of like if you were if you played a D1 sport when you left Kentucky, you graduated from Kentucky, you have a degree from Kentucky.
Sure.
If you decide not to go back to Kentucky and you go to Syracuse, which obviously you did. I don't have an issue with that. So
as long as it's the one transfer within the freshman through senior year, and then
that's where I think you get to because you have graduated, you have fulfilled your obligation at that point.
I think where it gets sticky is because when we talk about the transfer portal, they're still just all clumped into one.
Right.
When you talk about it, even if, you know, you're still technically in the transfer portal your fifth year of eligibility, right? I mean, sometimes we'll even see guys who maybe have just a couple guys or girls have a couple credits left and they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to take my fifth/grad year at this other school. I'll finish up and then I'll end up getting two degrees from there, which is kind of a hard thing to balance. But you're right, Chase. I mean, you look in the transfer portal and they're all just in one thing. Mm-hmm. And wherever the transfer portal is, it's like the iCloud that you have on your cell phone. It's somewhere in the sky.
Where is the portal?
Where actually
can we visit
is it?
The portal?
No, that's the thing. Like, nobody actually knows. I mean, I'm sure like you can go on and obviously if you have an account, you're a student athlete,
yada,
yada.
Museum?
You can enter it. But as I mentioned, I mean, in 2022, there's 20,000, almost 21,000 students in the transfer portal. Not all of these students are going to find landing spots. I would love to see an updated number on, you know, it's June. We're about 6 months into 2023. You know, how many players are currently sitting in the transfer portal with nowhere to go?
Can you take pictures of the portal?
Yeah, that's right. What does it look like inside?
Yeah. So an interesting discussion for sure. Thank you to Nick Saban. And I'm sure we'll hear more of that.
Keep the comments coming so we have content.
Yeah, I'm sure we will hear more of that at SEC Media Days here in about a month when it's in our city. But coming up next, it's D-Hop watch time. We have to get to that because I guess nothing new, but maybe a little bit more. We'll discuss. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Listen, I don't think this is good for neither the Tennessee Titans nor the New England Patriots, because, you know, to me at this juncture, it's like, okay, you got two teams really. It's a two-dog race, basically. And you have one guy sitting there trying to figure out which, you know, sort of dog to bet on or horse to bet on. And he don't really want to bet on any one of them right at this particular moment. Now, the race is, you know, a couple months away, but he hasn't bet on either horse. That's not good for either one of them, because to me, you're waiting on that third or fourth horse that you believe will come out of the woodworks, or you believe that will, you know, do enough that when the day comes that you got to sign, you will have more than just two suitors.
That was D-Mace yesterday, Caroline Willie and D-Mace, discussing DeAndre Hopkins and the DeAndre Hopkins watch. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You agree with that?
I think a team, you know, I see what he's saying, you know, right? Two suitors, but I think it's probably pretty clear that both teams want him, so he could have a landing spot. You know, we talk about players hopping into the transfer portal and not having a landing spot, but he does. He does have two teams that want him.
Yeah.
Of course you want more because you want to increase your market value. You want there to be a bidding war and have somebody outbid the other and be like, oh, we just want him so bad that we're willing to overpay for him. But I think at the same time, it comes down to what DeAndre Hopkins wants.
Sure.
I mean, if he just wants to get a payday in Tennessee or New England will do it, sure, take it. But I think it's clear that neither of them are giving him a offer that knocks his socks off, and he believes that he can wait a little while longer.
Yeah, and the other thing is he's got two teams that are interested in him that likely he's not going to win the Super Bowl this year.
Yes.
So very now, likely. I mean, look, he could sign a two-year deal, and you never know what might happen, but there's obviously a lot of questions beyond this year for the Tennessee Titans that we've discussed and will continue to discuss. And so he has to weigh his options of, even though, you know, it could be the best offer or it could be the best fit right now, if a team like Kansas City or Buffalo or some of these contenders aren't interested.
Sure.
It's just, you know, how far exactly can he take them? Can they go? Trevor Maddich, who is on Stillman and Company every Tuesday at 4:30, also weighed in on this, on whether D-Hop needs to make a decision soon. We'll get that in just a second.
Do you think then DeAndre needs to make a decision pretty soon?
I think he should. And if I'm DeAndre, I'm looking at, you know, a team like the Chiefs, because we talk about him, you know, wanting to be in the Hall of Fame and wanting a Super Bowl ring. Well, guess what? If he goes to a team and helps him win the Super Bowl, even as a wide receiver too, he's not the big star. He doesn't have the big stats, but he goes and gets that Super Bowl ring to add to his resume. Well, then he kills two birds with one stone. So really, I'm wanting to know what the final offer from the Chiefs is going to be. Let's see them extend Chris Jones, get some cap space, and see what they're willing to do. And then, to me, it would come down to the Chiefs and a lower ball offer than the Titans are probably willing to make, or the Titans, and I would make that choice if I'm him. If I'm him, I'm going to the team where I can get a ring, number one, and number two, I'm going to the team where I could best bolster my resume to sneak into the Hall of Fame, because ultimately those are the big things that he's playing for. If he gets those, the dollars will come even after he plays.
I think Trevor makes an interesting point, because I mean, I guess every player is like, yeah, I want to be in the Hall of Fame, but like, sure, how much is that really on his mind? And two, with the Chiefs have all the leverage in this, because they can just go, hey, we just won the Super Bowl and we didn't have top tier receiver. We had Travis Kelce. You know, that's what we have, and that's what we need. Mm-hmm. You know, now would they like to have a receiver like DeAndre Hopkins? Sure, but they're not going to overpay for it because they don't have to.
No, and I don't if I'm not mistaken, I think the Bills were the only ones who actually extended an offer since he'd been released from the Cardinals.
Well, and there's been reports that there have been financial offers, if you want to, not a full-on offer, but basically they've discussed what they're willing to do with the Titans and the Patriots.
Sure. I think, and I understand what Trevor's saying there, you know, and I think his comment towards the end on, well, if you join a team like this and you win a Super Bowl and you become a Hall of Famer and you have a ring, the money will come after your football career. I think that that's a really important point to hit hard on. No, maybe not, you know, the money that he's getting while playing football or the money he's gotten in the past while playing football, but it will continue to play or will continue to pay. I think, though, I just don't think what we've seen from DeAndre Hopkins leads towards him really caring about going to a team that is a Super Bowl contender.
I think he's chasing the money.
So yeah. I understand everything Trevor's saying, right? Like, well, if you go to a Super Bowl contender, you know, and you get the ring and you end up being a Hall of Famer and all of these things that are the ultimate goals in football, sure, the money will come after. It won't be this type of money. But does that really matter to him right now? And I don't think it does. I think what we've seen from him, the fact that he even visited with the Titans, with the Patriots, I know there's something to be said about setting the market, but why would he be taking the time out of his day to visit with these teams, to meet with these teams, to go to these organizations if he had no interest whatsoever? And I think it's pretty clear that both of these teams are not Super Bowl contenders, and if he was really worried about that, he would have taken the deal with the Bills.
Yeah. No, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, I definitely think he's chasing the money. And, you know, the difference between he and OBJ, because he's thinking, oh, I can get an OBJ-type contract. OBJ does have a ring.
Yes, he does. And he played a big part in that.
He played a very big part of that in the game he got hurt in. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he was playing well when he got hurt during that game. So, and I mean, look, everybody knows OBJ got overpaid, and teams are not going to do that to DeAndre Hopkins because they're looking at the Ravens going like, bro, like, what are you doing?
The same teams that are also looking at the Browns going, why'd you give Deshaun Watson that contract? That's what the Ravens are looking at because they're like, took us so long to sign Lamar Jackson. They're like, you know what? Let's amp up this wide receiver market right now, give OBJ a big deal. But it's true, Chase. It really is true. He was able to find a team. I mean, it's clear that Lamar has a lot of leverage with the Ravens. They wanted to keep him. He didn't have the agent. He gets this massive deal. And then
– yeah, and if Lamar had signed already, OBJ would not have gotten that money, no. I think.
I think it was – listen, it was a smart move by the Ravens because they knew they needed to get a deal done with Lamar. They knew that – okay, let's overpay OBJ so he essentially can just say yes right on the spot because he knows that we're paying over market value. No other team in the league is going to give him a contract like this. We'll get him, and then we'll also get our quarterback, and we'll be even closer to being a Super Bowl contender because I put the Ravens as one of the best rosters in the league, top roster in the league. But at the same time, you know, if you're the Chiefs sitting in this, you're like, well, I mean, we did it without a stud wide receiver. We did it with a Juju Smith-Schuster. We did it with, you know, a tight end being our number one threat in the passing game. We don't really need him. If we got him, yeah, that would be awesome. But they can sit back, like you said, and have their hands off the situation because they know that they have Patrick Mahomes. And at the end of the day, that's going to matter more than really anything on the field. So how much does he care about all of the Hall of Fame, all that jazz? I don't really think a lot just based off of what we've seen from him.
I don't. I mean, like I said, I think it kind of matters to everybody, but it's not like this is my ultimate goal and I need to go do this and play with Patrick Mahomes so I can help achieve this goal. I don't feel like that is really his mindset right now. His mindset right now is all about the Benjamins. I mean, that's what
he's... I mean, he knows that this is probably going to be his last contract.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
I mean,
well, not necessarily.
If it's a one-year deal, that'll be obviously...
Yeah, I mean, he could get a one-year deal, ball out, and then probably go get a payday somewhere. Not to the extent of what he would have gotten a few years ago, but, you know, maybe better than what he's looking for right now. But right now, this is what players have to understand. he doesn't have the leverage because all the teams, basically, they're going into training camp with, well, this is what we got. Mm-hmm. Now, would we like to add you? Sure we would, but we don't have to overpay you. Like, you know, it just – that's the way this has worked out of when he got released. You know, they couldn't trade him, and so everybody knows that.
Yeah.
So it just
– So a team didn't want him that bad, right?
Sure. It's like, we'd like to have you, but we're not going to give up what it takes to trade for you, and then we're not going to pay you what you think you're worth. Mm-hmm. That's just – that's the bottom
line. Reality of the situation right now.
615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in on DeAndre Hopkins, because there's a couple of other angles with this that I want to hit coming up next, including some comments from Albert Breer and Jeremy Fowler on the D-Hop situation. We'll do that. Elliot Friedman at the bottom of the next hour. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found Nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.